Hi, this is Lucy Scott,
Alex Hightower,
and Lainey Mace.
This is Do You Even Podcast, a podcast about everything you didn't know you wanted to know about podcasts.
Welcome back, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello. Oh,
this is a very special episode.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to do an intro that does it justice.
My brain is buzzing
right now. Get ready. So we actually just finished the podcast and we're coming back to record the intro because we just didn't even know where to begin. We're so excited. And now it's even harder.
Yeah.
Because we had such a great conversation. But we are doing our first ever interview.
Woo!
We just did it actually, and it went way better than we could have ever imagined. So as you know, I did a BYOP a few weeks back about Chasing Earhart, and luckily the team that does the social media was so nice and reached out to me and they wanted to come on the podcast. So we have a really great interview with Chris Williamson coming at you, and it's so great. He's the best person.
I can't imagine us having a more enjoyable first interview for this podcast. And he was so generous in talking about his own love for podcasts, why podcasting is the medium he chose for this project. I mean, I think it's pretty special.
I think it gives a really great in-depth look at his project. If you want to know, like, who's behind it, that you just get all the dedication of him and his team. Mm-hmm. So, like, get ready for some really, like, heartwarming
You should have seen our faces while we're recording. We had him on Skype, and we just, like, everything he would say, we were just, like, jaw-dropping. Like, that is so beautiful, or you're just great at this.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for you guys to listen. And everything he says is really interesting behind the scenes of the podcast, because I know it's stuff that I thought about when I was listening. So if you're a fan of the podcast, it's cool to hear a little of how it came to be and a little bit more about him, because sometimes he does let the guests kind of go off. So
now we flipped it. So now we're asking the questions.
Hot seat. Which turned out to be like, a cool warm room temperature seat, because he was so great. And we had so many great questions and he had so many great answers.
Yeah.
And so
even if we hope that you'll listen because you love Amelia Earhart and it's something that you're interested in, or you're interested in her life. But also if you are someone who is interested in like long-term projects, like he spoke a lot about sort of the years of research that he did even before launching any project on Amelia. He talked about how his team came together. It is a really great in-depth look into how something like this comes together.
Yes, not alienating anyone who doesn't care about Amelia Earhart. It's really cool to hear what he had to say from podcasts as a medium. He listens to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And just his enjoyment of the medium in general.
So if you know a lot about Earhart or not that much, then I think you should give it a good listen.
You will be very interested in Amelia after you listen to this interview.
So just so everyone knows, Chasing Earhart, as Lainey raved about, is absolutely fantastic. And if you want a little bit more after you listen to the great interview, feel free to visit on the web at chasingearhart.com. They also have Facebook as well, facebook.com/chasingearhart, and Twitter too. So feel free to like drop like a DM, whatever, if you have any follow-up questions.
Yes.
Show them love. They are so welcoming. So if you have any questions, I'm sure they'll follow up.
Yeah. All right. Here it is.
Hope you enjoy.
Hey, guys.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
So we have a really special guest with us. After our BYOP, we did a little shout out to the Chasing Earhart podcast, and they reached out to us, and they wanted to do a little collab. So we have Chris on the line.
Hello, hello.
Oh, we're so excited you're here. We talked to you before this to kind of see what it would look like, and we were just so overwhelmed with how great you are and how nice you are to us. And we love what you're doing. So we're really excited to talk to you.
Yeah. The more I think we started like the preliminary conversation into your podcasting experience and how it fits into your larger project, it just seemed like something that we wanted to delve into more on our podcast. And I think it'll be a real asset to our listeners. So we so appreciate you being here.
Yeah. You're our first collab, like our first interview.
Oh, wow. Well, that's an honor. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We're honored that you're here. Believe
us. Yes. We're very excited.
Okay. So because first and foremost, this is a podcast about podcast.
Kind of meta.
Yeah. And you said that you really enjoy podcasts in general. And so we just wanted to know a little bit about like what you like to listen to and maybe some of your favorite podcasts.
Yes. So the first of our many, many burning questions. But yeah, just why do you listen to podcasts? What do you go to podcasts for?
Well, it's cathartic for me personally. It's kind of a little bit of a long story, and it kind of ties into one of the podcasts that I listen to a lot, actually. I'll try to keep it brief. But about a year ago, I had to have heart surgery. And after the heart surgery, you know, that I had a lot of recovering time, and I didn't really couldn't do a whole lot. Couldn't be mobile in any way. I kind of had to stay down for about 3.5 weeks, almost something like that.
Wow.
After surgery. And so I just started listening to podcasts. I had listened to them before, but I got really more into them. And I thought at the time it was just a really good way for me to kind of, I guess, keep up with what's going on and my interests and just kind of what's going on in the world, and maybe just kind of allow me to escape from my current situation and kind of just, kind of, I guess, project myself somewhere else, at least mentally. And it really, really helped me a lot, you know, when it came to the recovery process, because I had, you know, being as young as I was kind of about, I had a little bit of a bout with depression because of my heart issue and stuff. And it was just a really tough time for me. So podcasts for me sort of became an outlet for me to listen to and to sort of kind of get away from my current situation for a little while. So, you know, as movies do for some folks and books and things like that do for others, podcast did that for me. So I think that's kind of why I, you know, gravitated so deeply towards podcasting, just in general, as far as just being a fan of other folks' podcasts and then just listening to them. And then, of course, you know, we had our own that I was kind of right in the middle of at the time, kind of developing. So, you know, podcasting is kind of ingrained deep in me. And I think that ties directly into my personal story a little bit.
That's definitely a personal story. Yeah. And it's really interesting to hear how like podcasts, what they mean to everyone, hearing how it does touch you.
We've asked that question to several people. And that's, I think, the most like fascinating, like interesting origin story that we've heard so far. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's like kind of an incredible way that you ended up at podcasts.
Yeah, that you connected to podcasts.
Definitely. Yeah, it's an intimate connection for me. And it always was going to be, you know, with our project, the podcasting was never going to be kind of, you know, shunned to the back. It was always going to be the kind of the forefront of what we were doing, even when the documentary kind of came into play, which we'll, of course, get into. But podcasting always was really special to me, even before I had my heart issue and stuff. But even after that, it just kind of elevated even further.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. Actually, just going off of that, what are some of the top podcasts that you like listen to or gravitate towards?
Yeah, well, the podcast that I was listening to a lot during that time is a podcast called Now Playing, and it's a movie review podcast. I've been a really big movie, just a movie freak, really, ever since I was little. And so I came across this podcast probably been a couple of years now that I came across it, but I really kind of got into it during that time period. And really, it's just three guys just sitting around that kind of review movies, but they do it very, very well. And, you know, you really kind of get that banter from them. They're very respectful of each other, but they have healthy disagreements. They review these movies extremely detailed. They have retrospective series on all these different films. They've done everything from, they started really with a lot of horror and did a lot of like Stephen King, a lot of stuff, but they went all the way into the more modern stuff with all the comic book stuff and the Marvel and DC films. And then of course they do like the, you know, the Oscar stuff and everything as well. And it's just a really great, you know, great podcast. And, those guys, their names are Arnie Stewart and Jacob, and they do really great stuff. And so that was kind of one of my favorite shows. And I've always kind of listened to that. I think that might've been really the kind of the first show I really kind of dove into and kind of binge listened. They have so many episodes now, and they have a donation thing. And it's a whole thing. I would encourage listeners to go check it out. They're really great. Especially if you like movies at all.
Yeah. Do you listen to How Did This Get Made?
I've only heard a little bit of that, but I'm actually, it's on my list. There's that's a podcast. There's so many to listen to that. You could, it's, you could, you know, you could really, well, you probably know more than anybody. You have a full-time job.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because it's like the opposite of what you're saying. It's not like about great movies. Sometimes it's about bad ones, but I feel like you would really like it.
Yeah. So it's a great show. One of my favorites. I listen to Astonishing Legends, and that's got a really interesting tie-in, as you, Lainey talked about in her, you know, when she talked about our podcast and everything, kind of ties directly into us. But I had been listening to Astonishing Legends since their inception, since they kind of came about in 2014. And I was really deep into pre-research at the time. And I remember making a note of that because I had been looking everywhere for sort of a representation of an Amelia Earhart podcast. You know, what would that sound like? What would people talk about? And there really wasn't much out there. If you search iTunes and Google Play and all that, a lot of one-off episodes, a lot of biographical stuff. But they really dove deep, and they did a really good retrospective on Amelia Earhart, pretty much non-biased, you know, just kind of laid everything out there. And I love their tone, their style, very professional, great guys, and they become friends of mine. And, you know, they're just really, you know, they're really good. And if you like the mysterious and you like the, you know, paranormal stuff, just anything that's just really kind of like unexplained, Astonishing Legends is where you want to go for sure. They're great. And, you know, I mean, there's a handful of others. Generation Y is one of my favorites. I love those guys. They're really great. And doing the true crime stuff and of course, some of the mysterious as well. And, you know, just, God, I mean, The Nerdist, because I'm a nerd at heart.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Nerdist, that's great stuff. Neil deGrasse Tyson's Star Talk Star Talk podcast, great stuff. I mean, I'm sure every one of us could list off 100 that we probably listen to.
Definitely can.
Definitely.
You have nice. Definitely some good on the list.
And nice, like, eclectic mix, too. Like, a lot of different genres covered, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to listen to a little bit of variety. I was also a really big pro wrestling fan when I was a kid. my cousin and I were really, really big into that. And my cousin was almost, you know, even though I had siblings, was more like a brother than anybody else that I had. And so we grew up together really close. And we listened to a podcast called Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. It's a really neat podcast, and if people haven't heard of it, it's pretty popular. I think it just won Sports Illustrated Awards or something like that for podcasting. It's a really, and all that is just, you know, this guy, Bruce Pritchard, who was, you know, really involved with, at the time, WWF and now WWE, all those years in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and he just kind of, it's really like an inside look at everything that goes on behind the scenes, and they just kind of break down all these different individuals, these different events that happened, and all these different things, and he gives you like a real inside look at kind of how things came about, how things were done, what the inside look was, and kind of what they were, what their approach was from that point of view. And it's really just a really neat podcast. And the whole show is great. And they're on, like, I don't know, their 100th episode almost or something. And those are really long podcasts. Some of them are 4 or 5 hours in length because these guys just sit down and just, whoa, it's just conversation. Yeah, they really go to town. They really do. And they have there's a host on there, Conrad Thompson, who just kind of grills them. Conrad Thompson's sort of like a wrestling historian. He kind of goes through all that stuff, and he just kind of takes them through these events match by match and event by event, and he just recalls everything. And it's really neat, especially if you've grown up with it. Because you can remember what he's recalling, and it's kind of a neat. So it's a neat way to kind of intimately connect to something you might have liked when you were a kid. So yeah, there's just, you know, there's just all kinds of great genres, as you know, and different ways you can go.
Yeah, we said it once, we'll say it again. Like, podcasts are so great because they're such a niche thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that, I would have had no idea about that podcast, but it's so long, and you obviously are enjoying it, so you're gonna stay for the full hour, four hours or whatever.
Yeah.
That's just so cool. I love podcasts.
Yeah.
Long time.
Wow.
Those are great recommendations for all of our listeners, honestly. Like you said, there's something for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So now I guess we're going to kind of go more into Amelia Earhart and the project itself. So can you tell us, I know you said you wrote a third grade paper about her, but a little more in detail, like you asked your guest how they came to know about Amelia Earhart and what made them fall in love with her story.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's you know, I always tell people when I give like my history day talks to kids and stuff, it really, third grade and that kind of age seems to be like the magic number. And it's interesting for us, like when we talk to different guests, we're pushing almost 200 guests on the project now. And everybody that we talk to sort of comes to Amelia Earhart for a different reason. But they a lot of them, I'd say a good 80% of those people come to her around the same time period. And that seems to be kind of when they do it. For me, it was just, you know, I did that project in third grade. And I remember sort of kind of falling in love with her story and kind of the woman that she was and kind of all the obstacles that she had to face. And I think it just kind of spoke to me in general. And so I remember not wanting to finish or not wanting to stop really doing the project once it was done. You know, we had to turn it in. And so I figured, you know, the next time it came around in fourth grade, I just kind of picked up where I left off. And it's sort of all the way went through my grade school into junior high, into high school, into college, and then up to the point where I wrote a dissertation on Amelia Earhart and just, you know, just different things that the projects and the papers seem to become more and more complex and just bigger ideas and just bigger, more deep thoughts and more deep research and all that good stuff. It just kind of stuck. So she always sort of became a staple for me. And so when it came time, you know, all these years later, back in, I want to say maybe end of 2008, early 2009, to start kind of doing pre-research, I just kind of had the idea that should always be Earhart, that where we should kind of start with this whole thing when we founded our production company and everything. And she never really left my viewpoint or my horizon, I should say. She was kind of always there. So that's kind of how the whole story came about for me. And I think it's really kind of a common story when you talk to a lot of the guests that we have. They, not necessarily with the projects and things I did when I was little, but everybody kind of gets introduced when they were little, when they were young, and they remember doing a report on her. They remember, you know, having a lesson taught on her or something like that in grade school early on like that.
I have a quick follow-up to that. That's so interesting that kids at that age gravitate to her story. Do you have any idea why that is or why that seems to be such a common thread? Even if that's, if kids are learning about Amelia Earhart in the third grade, what is it about that story that they find so engaging and so riveting and really grab onto?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if I could put it into a single word, I would tell you the word would be hope. And I think that's what kids love. Kids are fascinated. I was just talking with Brad Meltzer the other day. He was on our show, and he really kind of put it really eloquently when he was talking about his daughter. He told his daughter when she was, you know, younger that, hey, Amelia Earhart flew across the Atlantic Ocean, and her, you know, his daughter said, well, big deal, Dad. Everybody flies across the Atlantic Ocean. but if you relate a story to kids, and the way what Brad did with his daughters, he said, you know, Amelia Earhart, when she was a little kid in Atchison, Kansas, built a roller coaster on, you know, she kind of built it off the top of this tool shed that she had. Her uncle and her sister helped her build it, and she greased the track with lard, and she went flying for the first time and crashed.
I'm sure if she did that, she went flying. Yeah.
So if you tell that story, which is a very famous Earhart story when she was a kid, all of a sudden Amelia Earhart becomes alive again. She becomes a real person that kids can relate to. And I think Amelia's sort of her story, just kind of growing up the way she grew up and doing the things that she did and kind of having those experiences and not taking no for an answer, really gives young kids hope that they can follow that same, you know, path, that there's nothing that cannot be done. I tell that to my son all the time. He's 8. And I, you know, Amelia Earhart, I think, you know, I say this all the time in our talks and when I talk to media and stuff, that she demonstrated, you know, when she was a kid, that with her example then and then her example growing up to kids now, that you can truly have, do, or be anything you want. There's no limit. And I think she really, example is just a big source of inspiration and a big source of hope for a lot of kids that maybe don't have a lot of hope, you know, for whatever reason, that they can look at someone like her that at the time there wasn't a lot of hope for women to get into aviation. I mean, she certainly wasn't the first one, but she sort of was the one that kind of just shattered that glass ceiling and just kind of made it possible for everybody to sort of follow through and follow her example. And that still resonates. It still sends ripples to you know, today, to the women that are doing these wonderful things that are involved in our project today. And I can say that because a lot of these women that are young and in the start of their careers take inspiration from a woman who disappeared 80 years ago. It's pretty mind-blowing to kind of listen to women talk about that. How it still has an effect on them, you know, and there's a reason there's an Amelia Earhart Day at NASA, you know, there's a reason for things like that, is because she still matters, and she still gives hope to kids, I think, especially. That's why so many kids come up to us dressed up as Amelia Earhart, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, you know, it's incredible. It's, you know, she inspires people. So, hope, inspiration, I think adventure, those three things are what excites kids. And I think that's why she still talks to kids today.
Oh, I'm ready to go now.
Me too.
I'm
inspired.
So,
yeah, it's exciting.
So podcast, we know why you like them and you gravitate towards them now, but why podcast to share this story? Why this medium exactly?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, when I was going to do this originally, really, it kind of goes back to kind of the end of the pre-research phase in 2009 when I was kind of ready. I did about 9 years of pre-research, whatever, before I kind of launched the podcast. And really, I kind of at the get-go, I didn't really know. I don't have any kind of structure. I didn't have any kind of business plan. I didn't know what it was going to be. I only knew I wanted to do a project to sort of end all projects on Amelia Earhart. And I had no idea at the time what it was going to be or what format it was going to take. And then in 2013, I think it was, I decided podcasting was kind of the way to go. It had sort of exploded at the time. It had sort of become, you know, really big at that time. Now it's bigger than ever. But at that point, it was kind of a, I don't want to say new, but it was kind of, you know, a new-ish kind of form of media. And it was kind of really getting kind of a lot of attention. And for a practical reason, I thought, you know, for financial reasons and things, I could just do this as a podcast. There's not a whole lot of overhead. You know, you get some equipment, you can kind of reach out to people via email. You can kind of tell them what you're doing. You can have them all on the podcast and the show. There's no limitation to who you can have on the show because you don't have to travel. You know, we've talked to people all over the world, you know, so if I want to go interview somebody, all we need is an internet connection and we can do it. And so suddenly it just kind of seemed possible that the podcasting seemed to be more and more attractive as far as, you know, wanting to do this project. And, you know, when we started kind of, when my wife sort of suggested doing the documentary, the one thing I didn't want to throw away was the podcast because I thought, well, the podcast can still sort of serve as the backbone of the project. And it's really our way of putting out our content weekly. So while we're shooting this 2.5 year long process, this documentary we're doing, people can still get the podcast week after week after week, and they can still hear from all of our guests. And by the time the documentary drops, when these guests pop up in the documentary, you'll know exactly who they are. You'll know exactly where they come from, what they bring to the table, what they believe, all that good stuff. So it really just kind of is a good way for us to establish a business relationship with all of our project guests. We typically record the podcast with everybody first before we go out and shoot with them for the documentary. And it makes people, it gives us a little bit more of an intimate connection with that person when we go out and actually shoot with them because they know who we are. They've talked with me at length for a while. They've talked to Vanessa. They've kind of interacted with our team. And the podcast makes all that possible. So it's been very, you know, well received. And this project, I remember, you know, telling my wife in the beginning that it would take years to get off the ground, and that was 7 months ago, and here we are. So it's, you know, it's just exciting. It's a blessing for us to be able to do what we're doing. And podcasting, I can tell you right now, without the podcast, the Chasing Earhart Project would, you know, while it would still be an exciting idea, it really wouldn't be a living, breathing thing without the podcast. So that's why we do the podcast. That's why we want to put it out there in this format. And, you know, practical reasons, people are always on the go. They're always you know, either driving or going somewhere or doing something, and they always have their phones on, they always have some headphones available or whatever, they can listen to the podcast. So they can take us, you know, with them, and they can sort of, what we like to say is join the chase and kind of get in on the project. And, you know, it's just, it's worked out really well for us.
Yeah. We talk a lot about, podcasts as a medium being, there's not a lot of barriers to entry. Mm-hmm. So whereas there's a lot of politics surrounding television or movies being made, literally I can be in my basement and record something and get it out to anyone who wants to listen. And I think that's really how you find that those niche markets as well. People who don't know that it would be interesting, but they start it and people come. So I think that aligns perfectly with what we always say. So that's good to know. It's true in this aspect as well. So with that being said, what are some benefits and maybe even some downsides to using podcasts as a medium in general?
Yeah. That's another good question. Really, the benefits are easy. Really, the benefits are kind of a little bit along the lines of what I just spoke about. We can just kind of reach out to anybody. There is no geographical limit. So we can have people. I've had people on from Australia, from New Zealand, from, you know, France, from, I mean, all over the country, obviously all over the world. And people can kind of partake in that. It gives people an opportunity to really kind of follow along with the project anywhere on the planet, which is exciting. So that's a major benefit. Now, as far as the downfall for us, it's a little bit different because we have we're dealing with a sensitive subject when it comes to not her life, but her death. We're dealing with a very sensitive subject as far as what people believe. And when, you know, when I did the episode with, I know, listened to the episode of Astonishing Legends, and Forrest sort of kind of put it really eloquently when he said, you know, there's always camps. And with Amelia Earhart and the disappearance hypotheses and all those things that are being worked at the moment and have been worked since the early 60s, there are hardcore camps as far as what people believe. And so when we have a guest on our project sit in on the show, believe me when I tell you that we hear it afterwards from other people that are emailing us and saying, oh, this what this person says is, you know, factually inaccurate, and this is wrong, and this is wrong. And,
oh, wow.
And wow. I can't believe you didn't challenge them on this. And people really aren't kind of, you know, those people, and now it's a little bit different. It's still there. Definitely, it's still prominent. But when we first started, for instance, I'll give you a really good example. We started reaching out in the very beginning to, I think we originally had a list of like 25 people we reached out to. And, you know, we had different people in different camps who reached out to, and we shot everybody emails within like a 48-hour period. So right around the same time. And the folks from TIGER, the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, who are very prominent in the news when it comes to Amelia Earhart, and they've been kind of working the island of Nikumaro for almost 30 years now, they were the first ones to reach back out to us. So we had Dr. Tom King on the show. He was our inaugural episode. And then we had a gentleman by the name of Paul Niquette, who is not really associated with any one hypothesis, just kind of more of a general knowledge on Earhart. And then the third episode, we had Rick Gillespie, who's the executive director of TIGER. So you had two out of three episodes that had TIGER individuals on it. And I can't tell you how many people blew up our email after the third episode with Rick Gillespie, because they said, OK, you guys are certainly just in bed with TIGER, and this is all you want to do is just TIGER.
Jeez.
So they hadn't realized that we had recorded 14 episodes at that point.
Yeah.
And that we had, you know, five Japanese capture hypotheses guests on, that we had three authors, we had two astronauts, and we had all these different people, but we were releasing bi-weekly at the time. Mm-hmm. So in order for these people that were sort of upset with us to understand that, they'd have to wait about 16 weeks to get all those episodes out. I had to sort of defend kind of our stance on, you know, these first two out of three episodes being TIGER people. And so now we've, you know, we just dropped episode 25 yesterday, actually. They just dropped episode 25, I think. So now we have, if you look at the 25 episodes, there's a even in that 25 short amount of episodes, there's a big variety there. But we still hear it. And it's one of those things that really kind of is a downside to podcasting, because a project that's this big in scale and this long, I always tell people, look, I can promise you we're going to get to everybody. Everybody's going to get their chance, and we're going to showcase everybody. But you have to give us the time. And people are just naturally impatient these days. And I think they think if we have, if you have three episodes with one group and only two episodes with the other group, you must be biased towards those other ones because you have one more episode with, you know, it just gets to be like, I don't have time for that. It's ridiculous. So it's like, it's just insane. So I hear that stuff, and it's like I got interviews to write. I got people to, I got things to do. Like, if you want, you know,
Go ask them yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's like, just let the project stand for itself, and yeah, exactly. And if at the end of 2019 you haven't been heard, well, then I guess we, you know, didn't hear you at that point. But, you know, we still got 2 full years to shoot on this thing and 2 full years worth of podcasts to put out. So
yeah,
it's a lot.
I guess I have 2 follow-up questions to that. One about research, if you can talk about, like, I know on your website it says everyone is kind of vetted to make sure everything is sound. Mm-hmm. And then also, who are the people who are calling in? Are they listeners, or are they, like, other professionals in the field?
Yeah, you mean as far as the guests that are on the show?
No, the ones that are calling and having a problem with other things.
They're actually, I can tell you right now, they're other people that are experts in the field.
So I find that various, so interesting to me, because scientists in general are very like, we need all of the aspects, even though I might have a theory. I don't know. I just find that really interesting, right, that it's people who are upset because we're looking at things from different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's people have tried to tell us, you know, sort of how to run our project. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I mean, obviously I don't have time for that. I mean, I'm not going to allow anybody to run our project, but our team. And you know, if they want to do what we're doing and try to do this too, they're of course more than welcome to do it. But, you know, as far as like, you know, the research, your question about the research, we've done our homework. That's for sure. I can tell you that I did research for, almost 9 years before I ever reached out to a single person, because, and more importantly, because I had enough respect for all these individuals I was going to contact, to really sort of kind of, you know, be able to keep up with them on a question and answer format. So when I write my interviews, because every interview I write is custom with the exception of a couple questions in the front and in the back that Lainey had mentioned in the show, because I think they're concrete questions. But every other question is very custom to that particular guest there, whether it's an author or whether it's a researcher or a scientist or an archaeologist or whatever it is. It's very specific. And so for in order for me to do that, I have to do proper research. So everything has got to be vetted as far as if we invite someone on the show, they have to have, you know, really a tangible hypothesis, something they've been working for a long time. It can't just be something they believe in with not a lot of backup. It has to be, you know, sort of something that is really a passion for them. And, you know, if it is, then we'll definitely hear them out. And if we determine that it's worthy of the project, then we'll definitely feature it. We don't have a bias towards any one hypothesis. And I think that drives people absolutely nuts that we don't. Because in the beginning, we sort of came out and said, look, we're going to do this project with no bias. And people were sort of like, okay, well, yeah, right. I'll believe that when I see it. And then we start producing everything in a true bias. And now they're challenging us on that no bias, telling us that we have to believe something. And so, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. It's sort of like some of the stuff that we get is really kind of fascinating and kind of shocking in a way. It's like, because the people we hear from that are kind of having these kind of complaints are just not people you would imagine that would have these kinds of complaints. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we just try to keep the status quo, make sure that we do what we set out to do, because the moment that we shift that status quo, then the project fails. And we don't want that to happen, because that's more important to me than what some person thinks or some, you know, group of people think or whatever. This really, I've always said this to everybody, and people there's a group of people that just don't seem to get this, but Amelia Earhart belongs to history now. She belongs to everybody. And our job is to sort of compartmentalize and put everything out there. And if you believe that she simply crashed at sea, that's wonderful. We're not going to challenge you on that. If you believe that she was executed on Saipan or some of the variation of that, that's totally fine. You know, if you choose to believe that she returned and lived her life, and which is gotten a lot of momentum lately, that's wonderful. I mean, we don't, you know, it's not our job to kind of challenge that. It's our job to present it. Mm-hmm. Sort of like I always tell people it's like a jury trial case, mm-hmm. but in this case, the jury is public opinion. We're just going to present everything to everybody, in that way. And we're going to get out of the way at that point and let them decide, you know, what they feel happened with all the evidence presented for the first time ever. You know, uncut, untruncated. The only time we ever edit anything on our show is if there's a physical audio issue or if somebody physically tries to attack somebody else, and it happens a lot. And I tell people all the time.
Really? Oh my goodness.
I mean, I don't mean physically, but you know, like verbally over the show. If they try to say it. Yeah, if they try to say it, I tell them in the very beginning, look, if you want to do it, you can, you know, if you want an ear for that, you can tell me all you want. Just know that it will be cut. It'll not make the show. Because that's not what we're about. Right. There's certainly been enough of that. If you do even a little research on Earhart and you go into some of these forums, it gets downright nasty. And we are about promoting the way she lived and celebrating the ripples of her impact and, you know, discussing the disappearance in a brand new way and, you know, letting people challenge, you know, their own beliefs on what they feel happened to her. And so, you know, it's hard not to get caught up in all of that. But I think it's a credit to our team that they don't, they just don't get caught up in it. They don't have frankly, they don't have time for it. Yeah. We have so much stuff going on. We just don't have time for that.
That's an interesting way to put it as well. I've always kind of wondered why people get so like upset when people, I guess, like intrude on their beliefs for this. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't really matter. But the way you said it of like, they are so close. It belongs to everyone. And they feel like they have such a right over her because she means so much to them. So that's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. It's she belongs to everybody, and you know her story. People come to her story for different reasons, and they get what they want to get out of it. And you know, we realize that our project is sort of very specific, and we have a very specific audience. But people will come to our podcast and come to our project for different reasons, and they might only listen to one or two episodes that really entices them because we have a specific guest on that they happen to be a fan of, or whatever the case is. But we found that a lot of people have sort of picked an area of Amelia's life and sort of gravitated toward that area and become a fan of the show and kind of followed along with everything else because there's such a big fan of that specific area of Amelia's life. And so that's kind of a neat way to look at it. And it's a blessing to us that anybody kind of listens to the show and enjoys it. So that's all we're about.
Yeah. Well, I had written down a question that said, why did you go from bi-weekly to weekly? But I think it's probably just because you had a lot of information to get out there. Is that true?
Yeah. You mentioned that on the show when I was actually listening to it. And that's, you're right on. It's just because that, you know, we're recording, we typically record about, we just released 25 yesterday. I think we have 41 episodes recorded already.
Wow.
And we have another 17 scheduled to record in February and another 12 in March. I think we're booking 3 months out in advance now.
That's busy.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Putting our recording sessions to shame. That's incredible.
It's really busy. Typically, you know, we devote, because we shoot the documentary during the week, so we usually devote the weekends just to do the podcast. And I usually will be, you know, they'll be editing all the stuff, and then we'll put out that episode on Saturday night to subscribers, and then everybody gets it Sunday. And, you know, usually I'll do... like this week I did 5 interviews this last week, but this weekend or yesterday I did 3 interviews that morning. And I think every interview typically goes from, you know, anywhere from 30 minutes to, I think the last one was almost 2 hours. What? It just depends on the interview and it depends on the guest and what they have to put out there and what we're talking about. And we have to, you know, we have to be careful based off of scheduling too, because some of the people we're attracting now are much bigger names, and they have, you know, we can do 30 minutes here or whatever, and that's kind of how we do it. So
yeah, you gotta get their people.
But that's why there's just so much information. Yeah, I mean, even if I was joking with my wife the other day, like we could devote, and I think it's going to happen when we start getting closer to the panel event in July, that, you know, we could literally devote all our time to that and stop recording the podcast for 4 months, 5 months, and still put out every week with no problem.
Yeah.
Which is what we wanted, because, you know, we have so much on our plate that I wanted to give myself that padding just in case I had to step away from the podcast for a few months or weeks or even or whatever.
We understand that completely. having a backup.
Planning out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Planning ahead.
Planning gets easier as we go.
Definitely.
How many people you said work on the project now?
So we have, I'm always wrong on this. I always get this wrong, but I want to say 25, 26. Okay.
Well, something we like wouldn't that. Know, so.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how we started out with just me. I mean, it was just me in, you know, in a room doing, writing down stuff long form and just kind of doing that. And then we started slowly adding people. When the documentary sort of option came around, I remember not really wanting to do it at first. I had really set on a podcast. Like, the podcast is fine. It's more than enough. It's different. We could make it work on that. And I was sort of overturned by that with one sentence when my wife had told me, well, you know, everybody focuses on all their documentaries about how she died. What if you just flip it and talk about how she lived instead? And so for me, it sort of all of a sudden, she kind of turned everything around with one sentence there. And I decided, okay, well, we'll look into it. And so we decided to do the documentary, and I had no experience, obviously, doing documentary filmmaking. But to my surprise and to my amazement, really, that everybody just sort of came out of the woodwork and started helping. And these are like people that were experienced in filmmaking and working in Hollywood and doing other projects and wanted to lend their talents to this passion, because they either loved Amelia Earhart or they loved what we were doing or whatever the case was. And that's kind of why we started shooting the documentary. And, you know, so it's always going to be the podcast. The documentary came around a little bit later, and then, you know, here we are. So it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, which is a blessing, and sometimes people say a curse at the same time.
It's amazing that you have a team of people who are as passionate about Amelia as you are, to have not only the technical skill on your team to help with the documentary, but also people who are driven by the same passion that you have.
Yeah, no, definitely, I would agree with that. It's all passion. No one's making any money off this right now. If somebody decides to pick it up and everything, I'm going to make sure that the first people that get brought along and get taken care of is my team. That's just, important. You know, I mean, it's the least I can do for all the stuff they put in. For me, it's a little different because I was always going to be kind of until it's over kind of deal. And whether I get, you know, any kind of recognition on it is really irrelevant to me. I'm sort of the unwitting face of the project now just because, you know, they kind of threw me out there and said, hey, you're the one that this got all this started and this is all from your passion. So you need to be the one talking to everybody about it. Aww. And so I sort of become the spokesperson, if you will, I guess, for Chasing Earhart. Now I have sort of a schedule of my own on top of everything else that we're doing as far as doing interviews and things like that, which is, don't get me wrong, I love every bit of it because the more people I can bring to Amelia, the more people I can bring to the project, the better. So, I mean, you know, I just kind of take it all in stride. But everybody's passionate. Everybody loves doing what they're doing, lending their talents to a project like this, and we couldn't be happier. And it just keeps growing.
What I've seen is great. Shout out to Jamie who reached out to us on social media.
Yeah.
But everybody seems so passionate about it. Even speaking to them, it's just they've had so many great things to say. Mm-hmm. So very lucky to be working with those people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And then I also was going to ask about guests, which we kind of already talked about. But maybe we could say, maybe I could ask more about like, was there any guests that said no or guests that have come to you and just wanted to do it out without you asking?
Oh yeah. In both cases, we've definitely been told no, for sure. There's a small, group of people. If I had to give it a percentage, I would say, about 97% of everybody we've asked have been enthusiastically saying yes to the project. So it's really, really, low, but there's probably been about maybe under 10 out of the 220 or so we've reached out to, that have said no. Mm-hmm. But they've said no for different reasons, you know, so we always respect that if they don't want to come on the project or if they're not something they're not able to do right now, or if it's saying no just because there's a scheduling issue and they don't think they can devote the time to it. I mean, we have a lot of respect for everybody that we ask, in the first place. So if they can't do it, you know, that's certainly not a problem. Luckily for us, we have a 2.5 year process almost until release. So if they can't do it, because this year is just really busy, you know, we'll come back and revisit them, you know, the following year and see if anything's changed and if they're willing to do it. We've also been fortunate and blessed enough to have people that don't want to be on camera or don't want to be on audio, but are willing to feed us research and feed us information and give us stuff that they have because they're an aviation historian or they're an Earhart historian or researcher or whatever. And, you know, that's how they choose to want to help out. And we make sure that we credit those folks for, you know, whatever photos they give us, documentation, whatever it is, because we want to honor their research. So that's kind of, you know, kind of how we do that. So very few people have said no. We have had people starting to come to us now, which is great. People are, it's funny. I was telling my wife, it's almost like whack-a-mole. When it comes you interview one person and then four or five more pop up, and it's really been exciting for us because we'll get with somebody and we'll interview them and they'll really enjoy the experience and they'll say, hey, did you talk to this person? And they'll either already be on our list, but we haven't reached out, or, you know, whatever the case is, and they'll give us, you know, they'll hook us up with that person's information, or they'll sort of kind of introduce us to that person. And it really, really helps because, in the beginning I was just sort of, you know, cold calling and cold emailing everybody. And they didn't know who we were, who I was, or anything. And so to have somebody sort of kind of vet you that's already been part of the project and already is a project guest makes it 100 times easier for us to kind of make that connection and to, you know, to kind of slide in there and kind of get them involved in the project. So people are coming to us now. We're getting a lot of media requests, which is great. That's something that I always kind of prayed for when we first started. Like, I really want people to kind of understand what we're doing. And so we're getting a lot of people that are kind of, you know, now that we're sort of established and now that we're bringing these guests into the forefront and now that we're bringing guests in that people actually know that are in the aviation community, aerospace community, stuff like that, we're starting to get a name now, which is really great. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything, a little bit of no's, a little bit of people coming to us on their own. But mostly it's us aggressively recruiting these people and saying, look, we need you. This is why. Everybody always asks us, well, I don't think I can really contribute what you want me to contribute. And then we do a 2-hour interview with them because it's such a great interview. They even say, God, I didn't think I can really contribute all that. And it's like, we already know. if we reach out to you, chances are we've already done the research for you, and we know exactly who you are, and we know exactly what you bring to the table. And even maybe kind of force those people to sort of think about things in a different way. And you know, it's great that we can kind of wake that up in people, I think.
That's great. So, Chris, while we have you, you spend a lot of time talking to people on your podcast about their theories and what they think happened to Amelia. We couldn't resist asking you if there are any disappearance theories that you have come to believe in.
That is the most common question that I get asked.
You're the expert now.
To get me to say what I think happened. And I'll tell you this, and this is just the honest to God truth. When I was on the show, Astonishing Legends, and I know Lainey heard this if she heard the whole show. Again, I'm going to refer to Forrest because he's great at doing what he does. He explained it beautifully. It's like those people that test cars. You know, you get the people that test cars and they take the car for a week and it's like, oh, it's the best car ever. It's got everything on it. And then you get the next car and it's like, oh, this is the best car ever. It's got everything on it. It's the same exact case with the Amelia Earhart disappearance case. You can look at any one of these hypotheses in and of themselves and you can be 1,000% sold until you see the next one. And then you look at that and you're like, oh, wow, I thought it was this one. Now I think it's really this one now because, you know, this and this and this. And then you look at the third one. And you're like, oh, man, I don't know. Now I know. I don't know what to believe. This all looks good. It's one of those kinds of cases, not unlike the John F. Kennedy assassination case, not unlike, you know, some other ones, Abraham Lincoln assassination and John Wilkes Booth and all that good stuff that's out there. The D.B. Cooper case is another one. You know, there's just so many different, you know, MH370 is another one, a recent one aviation wise. There's so many different hypotheses out there. I think, you know, it's interesting. It's always been possible. It's always been my standpoint that there might be a possibility that it could be a multiple hypotheses that kind of intertwine to make up the story of what really happened. And I think if you look at the case of Amelia Earhart and the disappearance, and you look at something like, say, the Japanese capture hypothesis, which is so big and so blunt and so dense, I should say. And then you look at like the Irene Bolam hypothesis, which we're getting ready to start kind of talking about in our podcast. Really, the only difference between those two hypotheses is that one, she makes it off the island of Saipan and comes back to the U.S. and lives her life. And the other, she does not make it off the island. There's really the only two different. That's really the only differences between the hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's possible that maybe a combination of things could have happened. You know, I don't know. It's just so early. And I think that with all the people that we have to talk to. And I think it would be for me a little premature to say, I think this is what happened. And I think for us personally, it's if we can't keep that non-biased kind of point of view, it can kind of skew our interviews a little bit. And you might have heard that before, like in other shows where people are really biased towards something in particular and they're interviewing somebody that they don't believe, you know, at all. And it just ends up being like almost condescending.
Right.
And for us. If you notice when I interview somebody, if it's a Japanese capture person, I'm all in on the Japanese capture hypothesis for you. If it's crash and sink, I'm all in for that. You have to ask questions in a specific way so you can get those people's information out there. And it's as powerful as it can possibly be. I learned that in high school. I mean, I had a young teacher in high school who was just got her teaching credentials, and it was in sophomore English class, and we had to do debate towards the end of the year, and they picked a topic that was just really you know, you'd have to pick a topic that was really controversial, like let's say abortion, we'll talk about that, and you'd have to argue what you believed, and you could easily do that passionately if you strongly believe that, you know, women shouldn't be allowed to get abortions, or if you strongly believe that they should be, whatever the case is, you argue that and you argue that first. And then without any kind of notice, she would tell us at the end of the debate, okay, tomorrow you come back and you argue the opposite way now.
Yeah.
And it really sort of forces you to think outside the box and really sort of forces you to sit in that other side's kind of shoes and really kind of look at, okay, why do they feel the way that they feel? Why do they think the way that they think? And it really kind of opens up your eyes. And I think that's sort of what we're doing with the Earhart case, is we're really kind of forcing people to look at everything. And even if you think it's absolutely insane or you don't believe it because Occam's razor or whatever it is you want to believe, you need to actually look at all this and get everything, give everything its due attention. And that's kind of what our job is to allow people to do that, to allow the general public to do that, you know, untruncated. That's why I love the grassroots nature of our project. Nobody owns us. We're not corporate funded. We don't have to answer to anybody. We do what we do. We put it out there and people can decide for themselves.
Yeah, it's funny you said that because I was just thinking of a teacher I had for politics. Mm-hmm. And they always would play devil's advocate and say, well, you could think this way. And I really think that affected a lot of us and how, because if you came in and argued Republican, maybe that's all you would think about from then. And it was really, yeah. So it's a good example you gave.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
And just to start kind of rounding us out, we know that you did years of research on Amelia before you really launched the project. But since the launch of the podcast and working on the documentary, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how your thoughts about Amelia Earhart have changed, if they have, or if learning more about Amelia has sort of enriched your understanding of her life.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's really just made me appreciate her more, I think. It's just like with anything else, when you start looking at somebody's life and you start kind of diving into that, you sort of discover little known facets of that person's soul and their spirit that you kind of didn't know existed. And for us, it really hasn't been any different. When I started this thing, I really kind of wanted to really heavily push Amelia's life and how she lived and the kind of woman that she was and, you know, why so many people sort of seem to gravitate towards her. And I think, you know, my wife and I were born and raised in Southern California, and we just recently moved out to the Midwest to Atchison, Kansas. And I happened to be living about three blocks away from the house that Amelia Earhart grew up on. Yeah, and so it's the Birthplace Museum now. It's actually, you know, it's a really nice museum, and they do a great job there. And, you know, matter of fact, we have a really good relationship with the museum, and we do a lot of the interviews for our guests for the documentary in the room that Amelia Earhart was born in. Oh, so it's really like impactful for that person because it sort of puts everything in perspective. If you're a researcher and you're just so fascinated with, you know, if you don't care anything else about anything else but finding the plane and solving the puzzle, research, sit in that room, look at that bed where she was born on, and I can promise you, you'll feel differently afterwards. You really will. The roller coaster incident that I talked about earlier, I've stood in the backyard where they built that shed. That shed's not there anymore. But I remember, you know, standing right there in that spot. There's a tree right on the Missouri River that Amelia Earhart used to sit under and when she was a kid and just kind of dream. And it's still there. And, you know, we've been to her house in Toluca Lake where she actually contemplated and planned the world flight. And there's a little avocado tree that she used to kind of hang out under. She used to love trees. It was a big deal for her. And she planned the whole world flight, you know, which was to be her final flight. And it really ended up being her final flight. So it's things like that. It's things like the stories that we hear from her extended family. It's the stories we hear from the extended family of George Palmer Putnam, who was her husband, who loved her very dearly. It's, you know, people that we talk to that are experts on Fred Noonan and who really talked about Fred's passion for the world flight and working with Amelia and, you know, being newly remarried at the time of the world flight with that, you know, that they left and kind of doing what he wanted to do after the flight and his reasons for wanting to go on the flight and all that good stuff. It's really just sort of in the intimacy and the little stories that we kind of fall, you know, more in love with kind of Amelia's example and her story. And that's kind of what I can't get enough of personally. And I think that's sort of why we attract the people that we attract to the project, because everybody can tell us something different. Everybody can tell us another reason why they're so attracted to Amelia Earhart's story, or why they find inspiration from this woman who has been gone for so long now. You know, her life was really incredible, 39 years of incredible living, and she broke record after record after record, some of them her own records that she broke previously. This is a woman who just, you know, had to go through so much to achieve what she wanted to achieve. And all this before the most incredible disappearance of all time takes place. And certainly the biggest aviation mystery, the Lockheed Electra Tinny, is the holy grail of aviation. If that was found today, that would be equivalent to finding the holy grail. You know, there's just so much to her story. We joke all the time with guests that say that they kind of came into this, you know, 25 years ago. And when they first came into it, they're like, oh, you know, she flew what, for 9 years? I could knock this out in 6 months. I'll have it all taken care of. And then 25 years later, they're still on it. You know, there's it's like a magnet. It's not unlike, as I said earlier, the JFK thing. People that, you know, and the Abraham Lincoln and all that good stuff. People just gravitate towards it and they get swallowed whole in it. Whether it's her life, the disappearance, the mystery, take your pick, whatever you want. It's there's a reason.
I love that you said this is kind of like the end all, and you're quite literally starting at the beginning in the same room she was born, and you're interviewing, and this is the end all. I love that.
Yeah, you have to start from the beginning, from the cradle to the disappearance, because you sort of find things that you can sort of put two and two together, and you can kind of make assumptions on why she might have made certain decisions when she was older based off of what she believed and how she grew up when she was a kid. And I think that, you know, her mom was, you know, as Lainey mentioned in the episode there, her mom was the first woman to climb Pikes Peak. Her mom was no joke. Her mom was, you know, hardcore. And she instilled all that in Amelia and Muriel. And I think parents obviously have a, you know, the most incredible influence on kids. And if your mom and your dad is pushing you to be, you know, better than they are, you know, only good things can happen. And if you have that spirit in you that Amelia had, it's just, you know, it's a no-brainer. And so, you know, she certainly took her mom's example and followed in her mom's footsteps and 1,000 times over and did some incredible things. And that's why she's an American icon. And I tell people she's America's sweetheart still, you know. And people have this mentality of wanting to put a bow on things and to kind of end things and bring people home. We have a military mentality. We don't want to leave any of our people out there. And we, you know, she's out there and we want to bring her home. And that's kind of the whole point. And I think that's a lot of what our guests kind of share. They just want to see her come home. They want to see it be over. And so that's what we're trying to do in some small way, shape or form. If we can contribute to that, that's an added blessing. But, you know, in the meantime, we're going to be here. We're going to tell the story and we're going to do it differently. So.
Oh, my goodness. That was so great. Like, truly, thank you so much for taking time to speak to us about this.
Absolutely.
And yeah. We know that you have some exciting things coming up.
Yes.
So we'd love to hear about, I mean, you mentioned the festival earlier. Tell us what's coming down the pike for you.
Yeah, well, they have a festival every year in Atchison, Kansas, and it's the Amelia Earhart Festival. And Atchison's only got about 11,000 people that live in it, but every year about 70,000 people descend on Atchison. Oh. It's pretty incredible. They have it's this really great country concert. It's a concert on the lake that they do.
They rent a room out.
Yeah, they're pretty much already gone this summer. It's pretty incredible. You know, and so they've been doing this for 20. This will be the 22nd year. And it's sort of just a way to honor Amelia Earhart and, you know, and the woman she was and all that good stuff. And they do an incredible air show and they do a fireworks presentation like you've never seen over the Missouri River. It's really beautiful. You know, last year we were here, this last July, we came out from California. We shot with a bunch of folks while they were at the festival and kind of got some spotlight videos done. And, you know, to make a very long story short, now that we're here, I wanted to sort of do something special and unique. So we're bringing a representation of the almost over 200 guests, I think at that point, for Chasing Earhart to the festival. We're going to do a Chasing Earhart panel, which is a discussion panel about the woman herself, how she lived, sort of kind of what we're talking about today here. You know, the different various hypotheses. We're going to have a representative from every major hypothesis on the panel. And we're going to have authors. We're going to have educators. We're going to have a bunch of folks that have, but most of them have never been to Atchison. So we're really excited about that, bringing a lot of fresh faces. And it's really sort of picked up traction. We announced astronaut Abigail Harrison, and we announced Shasta Ways, who just finished her world flight this summer, who is the first civilian Afghan-born pilot who flew around the world in a single-engine plane. She's the youngest woman to ever do that. And she was born in a refugee camp in Afghanistan. Very incredible story. Takes inspiration from Amelia Earhart. And we just announced Kate Jerome, who wrote a book called Who Was Amelia Earhart, which is still on the Amazon bestseller list, like since 2002 when it came out. It was a children's book. It's really, really great book. And we have some really big names we're getting ready to announce. It's going to be a lot of fun. So going to be about 20 people, including myself, on the panel. And we're going to have a moderator. It's going to be held at Benedictine 20? College.
How long is the panel?
The panel right now looks like it's going to run for about 2.5 hours.
Okay, good.
Nice.
We're going to do
people,
it.
It's a lot. You got to get a lot more time.
Yeah, a lot more time. We're really kind of taking inspiration from San Diego Comic Con. I've been to many of those.
Oh, yeah.
And when you go to con and you go to those, you know, events, those panels, when they have like the big films that come out, there's 15, 18, 20 people on the whole cast, the producers, the director, everybody's on the panel. They do them for about 2 hours. and they have a moderator and all that stuff. And so we're going to kind of follow the same format. We're going to world premiere the teaser, the announcement teaser for Chasing Earhart, the actual documentary.
Oh, nice. I am so excited. Oh. I've been looking for it.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna world premiere that in front of the panel with lot, you know, a lot of guests will be in the trailer, so they'll see it for the first time.
This is what day?
This is Saturday, July 21st, so about 6 months out from now.
And so, Lainey's scheming now. I think
I gotta get to Atchison.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. You guys are welcome to come if you like. Atchison, I'm sure, will be happy to have you. We have a lot of people that are going to be doing live broadcasts and stuff from the event, which is really a lot of fun. A lot of radio shows, a lot of podcasts, because podcasts is, again, the heart and soul of what we do. So if podcasters want to come down and broadcast live or do a live show, I'm sure we can get a few special guests to stop by your booth and talk to you if that's something you guys are interested in. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's really going to be a celebration, kind of uniting all these folks through this project. Like I said, it's always been just nothing but a blessing for me and my wife, and just, you know, we're just excited for this, and we're ready for it to be here, basically. And we got a lot to do between now and 6 months, but it's just going to get crazier and crazier. We're getting ready to announce some pretty big names, and we're real excited about that.
This sounds incredible. I know the fan base is definitely there, and it just sounds like such a great way for everyone to like get involved and learn something new.
My gosh, definitely.
Dedication is impressive here too. All the planning.
Yeah.
And
all in. Yeah, we got to be all in on something like this. Otherwise, it's just not going to work out. So, yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun.
Wow. Well, that's all I think that we have, unless there's anything else you would like to speak about, ask us, or anything.
I just really appreciate you guys having me on. It's really, like I said, I was telling Lainey, I really love the passion. Jamie sent me the interview, and I love the passion that she had in her voice for Amelia, and for kind of, that's sort of sorely needed for what we're doing. People need to see, because people ask us all the time, well, why are you even doing this? Like, what's the point? You know, and every time we do that, I just show them pictures of like 9-year-old girls dressed up as Amelia Earhart. Like, that's why we're doing it. You know, there's no explanation needed. And we need, you know, people to show their passion and to be excited about, you know, her example and kind of how she rubs off on them in one way or another. I loved your story about kind of, you know, the quote that you had and kind of how you, you know, use that to help yourself. And something that, you know, it's a story that we hear quite often, and we just want to make sure that people understand that there's a reason why people are excited about this project, and they want to kind of follow it and get involved, is because, you know, we're doing something to showcase a woman that is, you know, is an icon in every sense of the word. And she still speaks to kids. So speaks to people, you know, men, women, doesn't matter. I mean, we have, you know, we just heard from almost a 90-year-old, you know, pilot the other day, who, you know, it's just like has inspiration from Amelia Earhart, and, you know, remembers the disappearance and remembers the search and all that stuff. And, you know, it's just incredible, the stories we hear on a daily basis almost. And, you know, that's why we're doing it. So I really appreciate, you know, you having me on and wanting to kind of showcase Chasing Earhart. It's an absolute honor for us.
No, of course. And truly kudos to you, because I what I see in your project is that you're widening the umbrella, inviting more people in. I think you're really doing a great job of amplifying that passion. And I really think like your own passion for the project is so contagious. Yes. Truly.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It means a lot. I hope it still, you know, hope it stays that way. As it gets longer and longer, I tell people all the time, it's like a terrible privilege doing this. it really is, because it's tiring. You know, you're up at 2 o'clock. I mean, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you do writing interviews, and you get up at 4:30 to keep writing. It's like, you know, you just don't have much sleep.
It's never ending.
It's insane. You really have to love it to do it. But it's like anything else. You know, we're not anything special when it comes to that. I mean, people that do podcasts and do what we do, like you guys and everybody else that's out there, they know, you know, the late nights and the writing and the, you know, putting together the show and, you know, the man hours and that it takes to do that. The labor, it's a labor of love. It really is. And so, you know, anybody that's listening to the show, that's a fellow podcaster, will totally get that. And, you know, we're just in that boat with everybody now, but, you know, now we have that and the documentary and everything else and the panel, and I'm losing hair as I speak.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it is what it is. You know, that's why God made hats. So we're good to go. You know, I'll keep going until this thing's out in 2019. If it kills me, it's going to be released. So, you know, we'll see everybody then. And and please listen along the way. And we love hearing from people that are, we don't have fans. I hate that word. They're project members. So if you join the project, whether you like it on Facebook or you subscribe to it, you're a project member. You're welcome to interact with our team all the time. You know, we're pretty transparent. Chances are if you hop on the website and you engage us and chat with us, we'll chat with you. You know, so it's pretty exciting. We love doing what we do.
I love that.
I know you said thank you to us, but thank you for coming Seriously. On and sharing everything.
Pleasure. Yeah. You've been so generous with us in terms of both sharing your passion and the story behind the project.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And your personal story as well and your connection to Amelia. It's meant a great deal. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's thank what
you.
Makes
it's been an absolute pleasure.
Podcasting yeah. important. And like mm-hmm. you said, it's the passion behind it. And mm-hmm. you wouldn't be where you are with you didn't have it. So before Absolutely. We leave, though, we want everyone to know how they can find you.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really easy. I mean, the heart and soul is our website, chasingearhart.com. That's in the top right. As soon as you hit the site, you'll be you'll be asked if you want to subscribe. It doesn't cost anything. We are going to be doing something special. I know it's sort of a Vanessa question for this, but I don't want to get too deep because she'll probably kill me if I mess it up. I would say, we are going to be doing some kind of a special VIP seating for the event in the first few rows that are going to be exclusive to our subscribers that will get it first before anybody else, where tickets even go out for it. So I know that for sure. It's got all of our social media links in the top right corner, so you can visit our YouTube channel, our, you know, all that good stuff, Facebook, Twitter. Our hashtag is @ChasingEarhart for everything for the most part. So you can find us pretty easily online. If you just Google search Chasing Earhart, chances are something of ours will come up and you can kind of link to us that way. So yeah, we're easily accessible.
Excellent.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And we wish you the best in all of this. If you need anything, let us know.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure and we'll talk again soon.
Talk soon. Great.
Absolutely.
Bye. Bye-bye, guys.
Oh my goodness, guys, that was so good. We told you. We told you it was great, and now you believe us. So we're just really excited again. Thank you, Chris. And I don't have words.
I mean, I loved it. I know you guys loved it. Like we said, follow them on all social, Facebook, Twitter, their website, whatever. Give them all the support you can.
Just go there. Go to the panel. Find him, show him that we know you. But really, thank you so much. And we're gonna sign off because there's nothing else we can say.
We're in heaven.
We are.
Yeah, yes. So don't forget about those reviews. Mm-hmm. We're still taking screenshots for the picture as of right now. So
yeah, so if you want a t-shirt,
A
nice, review. Yeah.
Gorgeous t-shirt.
And the picture is pinned to our Twitter, so you need to go check it out.
And as always, a huge thank you to the guys who did our theme song, Rob Righthand, Derek Kirch, and Greg Kaplan. It's so wonderful, and we're going to thank you forever. And also a huge shout out to our producer, Billy Richling, who went above and beyond to make sure this interview could happen with Chris.
Thank you.
So a special thank you to Billy.